mesh and the carbon dioxide increased, causing a shutdown or quick freeze. And in that quick freeze state, lactic, uric, and adrenaline are locked in. Then it'll start building up in the area.
That's why they recommend that when you do heavy workouts, you go a day in between to let your system, let the lactic acid dissipate and everything through your system, but you can't do yourself any good by working out daily, but you have to wait in between.
That's right.
Why. How about using that therapy? Well,
let me explain why it's exercise is rotated and not steady. Because you have 7 days which you're working with alkaline acid in your system. And it takes 24 hours to innovate the phase down from one level to the next. So if you exercise today and put your body in a state of acid and go and exercise again tomorrow, you're going to be double acid. By the time you take a check on your system, you're throwing your body too far acid. And there's not enough alkalinity, your body can start breaking down. Then if you rest in between, you have acid, alkaline, acid, alkaline, acid, alkaline. And that way your body stabilizes itself. But if you go acid, 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 you've had it. And you can't be alkaline, alkaline, alkaline either. You've had it.
So what specific exercises would you like alternate with doing this?
The Chinese people and the Indian people have developed two exercises. Indian people do this. Chinese people do this. American man turns on a little gadget on the wall and he can do this. Half of the day. And he can do this. The other half of it. That's the advantage between the, where we have the advantage. Exercise is controlled by temperature. So you see what the exercise really is involved. The Indian man, the place is too hot, so he can't move around too much. Otherwise, what happens to his body? It gets fired up too much. He needs exercises that will do what? Cool the body down, so he does postures. The Chinese guy has got a lot of cold areas to contend with. He can't sit down and do too much posture because he'll freeze up. So he gets up and move around to compensate for temperature. Now you're going in Tibet, they have two type of exercise, non-moving and moving. And the test where you graduate is to sit down and melt a block of ice naked. Then they send you home. No, that's what you do, because they really put you through a test like that. If you master these exercise, the moving type and the sitting type, then you should be able to regulate what? The biotemperature. So that when you take the test, and if you read that Milarepa and what's his name, the guy who wrote the third eye? Yeah. They all tell you about this test, where you sit down and you're going to end up then on a block of ice and let their whole bodily heat generate to melt the ice. Now, those are primitive ways because of lack of technological development. We are fortunate to have the technological development and can utilize the technique by setting up an air conditioning unit and cooling the room down and exercise, and then turn the heat up and move around and exercise. So you have both distribution of temperature to the body in terms of displacing the lactic acid in the body. Now, if you want to exercise with only either sitting down or moving or moving around, nature has built the most unique location. It's called a cave. And so if you go to Carlsbad, it ain't too far from here, exercise there and you never age, because nothing gets old or break down where? In a cave. It's nature's number one immortality center. Everything that's in a cave remains. The temperature is fixed, 56 degrees all year round. You don't freeze up and you don't perspire too much. But you can actually exercise in that temperature and keep all the functions of the body normal because it's fixed temperature 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the depth ratio, I was saying, I was trying to organize what is called the American Rejuvenation Center for Adults. We go down and stay in the cave for at least a few hours a day, if you can have a cave of your own. In the all the 12 basic organs around the clock, give it a rotation period to work with the temperature in the ground.
Down the moon, they have a factor of neutrons coming in.
Yes.
That penetrate our bodies in the cave, but don't. Isn't that a factor?
That's the advantage.
That's the advantage. Okay.
Swimming would help control your body temperature too. Mm-hmm. Is that why that would be good exercise? Because you don't have the big fluctuation in body temperature anymore?
That's right.
That would help that too.
Plus, we breathe for a forest open.
But you see, originally man is a sperm, he's marine life. So he's better off in water. And his whole exercise program and futuristic survival, because the largest percentage of oxygen is stored where?
Water.
In water. If we're going to be deficient of oxygen in the air, that's going to be radioactive, head for the water. And different depths control different reactions.
You recommend swimming in 56 degree pools?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
You see, what the thing is this, we are over-conditioned with a lot of lunar eating, making the body reactive to such a temperature. But if you start off eating correctly, cleaning up, eating on time within the solar pattern, you get back to a 56 degree pool, your body will sooner or later equalize itself to take the full advantage of that temperature within the pressurization of the water in and outside of the body. So basically the cells would not go through the retention of carbon dioxide as much as when you come out and then you have to utilize the air. See, the basic cause of the cells breaking down is the carbon dioxide retention.
Now what if our pool, for example, doesn't get down that low, it gets down to 62 or 60, do you still get similar benefits? Or is it a harmful benefit?
No. Anytime you go in lower than 75, you're in, it's in the your favor.
Okay.
Now, this young lady works with photography. What's the ideal temperature to develop a film?
68.
Now, hear what she said. Good. Right there, do you know what's the ideal temperature for a heart transplant?
68.
No.
I'm just
guessing. 64. It's lower than that. It's lower than that.
They keep the heart at what temperature? Preparing it for a transplant.
56.
42.
Mm-hmm. That's no, just the heart. Freezing.
Right.
Yeah.
No, 32 is freezing.
Yeah,
40.
But I mean it's
above.
Getting down.
All right.
There, yeah.
Now, the heart stays operable at 42. Then, from 42 to 56, which is a cave. How many degrees do you think you got?
14.
That
well,
ratio.
42 to 56? No, just to have something to do.
From 42 to 56, you only have 14 degrees movement. So that ratio of movement is where the heart interacting with the lungs will stay stable within the parasympathetic system and inhibit the effect of carbon dioxide in the organism. Thereby the organism now is living on a conscious, sensory, suspended, animated state. It's what we call conscious hibernation. you're conscious, you're active, and you're moving, but you're not burning up. Because the temperature is environmental, it's imposing this correction within the process of your activity. And you need very little clothes other than a sweater. You can handle 56 degrees very easily.
So what is the photography at 68 degrees coming in?
The film coolness to make the impression from light is the next range. So from 56 to
12.
Another 12, right? Mm-hmm. Within that 12 range, you have what is called your impression patterns. Mm-hmm. Now, what part of your anatomy, yesterday we were talking about photographic memory, would you take advantage to develop photographic memory now? What temperature?
About 68.
Right, okay, good. Right in that range, you can take any child or adult and start getting into a photographic memory bank training. Because the temperature will do the adjustment instead of the intense concentration of focusing. So the oriental people discovered that it wasn't the amount of concentration would make the transition. They used the environmental temperature to make the transition for their health. So the yogi sat down in a hot cave and used hot temperature to do what? Create internal changes by non-movement. And the Chinaman took the cold temperature and made movement the internal change. And they all called the basic technique chi and prana, meaning energy equal to mass times the velocity of light square, but inferring velocity of light square as a temperature ratio action on the body to get the best result with minimal effort. So that's how they use the formula. So they went to what is called the environmental temperature to the biological movement. Now, most of these researches were carried on in caves. Very little of the people who were making reports on it ever commented on the cave. But then when I went to the cave and did my own researches, I found out, hey, wait a minute. I don't know how to do a doggone thing. 56 degrees is already set up for me to do what? Just sit down and enjoy myself working within the range of hot and cool. So the Carlsbad is the deepest and Mammoth is the widest. And in between, across the United States, you got a lot of them, but most of them are all reading 56. I don't know of anyone reading less than or above. So it's already ready made bio inhibition process or non-breakdown process set up by nature. The correction of a lot of illnesses that if you take the person down into the cave, a lot of symptoms that are obvious in illnesses start to phase down. Hypertension, traumatic conditions, all sorts of things.
Does the cave symbolically also kind of represent the womb?
Yeah, it's symbolic of the womb in a way, because you have the brain reaction. With you. The person who benefits a lot is mental cases. The sense of security or reaching back for security in a concave or cave activity builds back in there. The feeling of security there and not being thrown out. See, that kind of action that you want back in the body will build it back up. It's good. Well, it depends on what you're using it for. See, everybody's use a clear up, but what are you using it for? That's more important. The bulk of my work has been with edema, swelling, and the results are fantastic. So when a person comes in with edemic processes, that's the first thing we do is use a clay pack. It's a natural constrictor.
The old mud on the beef thing?
Well, Some people use it like that, but I don't use it like that. See, I have four or five constrictors that nature already made. The aloe vera is a constrictor. The clay is a constrictor. And the cayenne kept it a constrictor in the external area. And DMSO is a constrictor in the external area. So when you compile it all, you apply it as an application instead of ice, which is a temperature reaction. This constricting process now forces the person to birth. That's what I want in the first place, for them to burp. I want them to sneeze. I want them to yawn. I can put it on and leave them knowing fully well, even if they didn't want to yawn, didn't want to burp, it's going to happen to them, which is exactly what I want in the first place. And before you know it, their eyes are watering, which is thawing out process. I can't complain, I'm aggravating them to cry. But I'm getting the results out quicker because that's exactly what I'm trying to achieve. I'm trying to achieve a thawing out process of the accumulation of fluid by a constricting technique. Now if I use ice, the first thing they're going to complain is, what, too cold. And if I keep working with them from a birth process control regression technique, they're going to start crying and think they're getting into too many self-effacing ideals. So to avoid all that and to get elimination, I put a pack on them and let it work. So when they see the result, then they want to talk. Then you don't force them to talk, they're talking. But that's what a pack really is for, it's a constrictor.
Right, and so if someone was too small, or too constricted, rather than too full, then you use a dilator?
Yeah, so I wouldn't use a pack though.
What do we use for dilation then?
Motion. They need motion. So I put them on a gravity machine. So I get the gravity to work for me now, down from the foot into the head. So they dilate. And then they breed more. And before you know it, the body is going to force to retain oxygen longer because of what the pressure is brought down on the lungs from the dilate, from an impact. She had one of my machines. They just put the first knot on. Let them sit fine. And then the increased pressure is the increased dilation.
I have one too.
That incline machine? Mm-hmm. Is that the one with the boot?
No. A snap on?
Well, I'm familiar with those types.
But the kind he's talking about is
the kind I'm talking is entirely different. Mine is a 3-in-1 gymnasium.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you ever seen the one we're talking about. No.
This is a dino specially designed. Oh. And it's, you don't hang by your feet, no stress on the ankles at all. You lie down on.
Well, you see, it's a 3-in-1 gymnasium where you lie on the unit and you adjust the position by your hand to the weight of your body. So your hands work for you for the first time, moving your body weight, giving you exercise in your biceps. Also, you can turn around on the machine, on the lie on the front, lie on the back. And you can do exercises in gravity. Mm-hmm. That way you can't do exercise, you're in gravity there, and that's it. This is a machine that allows you to shift your position and exercise in gravity. And when it is lowered down, you can use it as a punching bag. Then you can dismantle it and do jogging. Then you reassemble it and you can do push-ups and chin-ups. Because it's designed for therapy, it wasn't designed as an exercising machine to correct certain breakdowns in the body, but using gravity as a process to shift fluids in the body. If we have a set in this area, we'll be installing one in it. So that would give the group here something to relate to. I said if we have a center in this area, we will be bringing a unit. Her place has one, and Ed in Carpinteria has one. Mike Kelly has one.
Do you ever jam
with that? Not yet. She was going to go to live in
John, can you talk a little bit about organ transplants and what overtones it has spiritually in terms of the DNA and RNA from one body to another?
In my thinking, an organ transplant has nothing to do with your spirituality. The only one problem in an organ transplant is the electromagnetic reaction between the donor and the recipient. So as far as the chemistry is concerned, if the chemistry match, the transplant will bond. It's an electromagnetic transference between the donor and the recipient is where the problem will come in. So far, transplants fail to recognize this electrical discharge, and the only organ that doesn't take is the heart. Every other transplant will take, and the electromagnetic relationship with another human being will be bridged. But when it comes to the heart, they don't bridge. That's the one part of the anatomy that doesn't bridge electromagnetically. And every research is showing that it's faltering and it's failing, it's not holding up. It's not a chemical that is at fault. And whenever there's a heart transplant, the patient never dies from a heart transplant. He dies from a dialysis reaction in the kidney. Why? Because the shunt organ, which is the kidney, is overloaded from the removal of the heart to be put back in, and therefore the discharge is pushed into the kidney, and the kidney doesn't dilate. So they have to put it on dialysis to dilate it. So that's an electrical reaction going on in the heart somewhere that is not firing to relate. So as far as I'm concerned, organ transplants are valid in their own context, but the only organ that doesn't respond between a donor and a recipient is the heart, because of certain electromagnetic actions going on. Now, if you take a heart out of an individual, you can't take it out when he's alive. So the electromagnetic charge is gone. And you're the recipient of what? There's only a chemical content, but not an electrical. For your brain to synchronize, to accept, to relate, you have to have an electrical synchronicity for the heart to work. Every other organ will accept or be accepted by the body outside of the electromagnetic field, but not the heart. Because the heart is the only organ in the body that has a dual function to handle carbon dioxide or the venous blood and the arterial blood. No other organ is doing that. Every other organ is either transporting one through and receiving the other. The heart is doing two. So there is an electrical condition involved in it. Even though we make a mechanical pump to duplicate the heart, after a given length of time, that object has no electrical synchronicity with the brain. Therefore, the kidney starts failing again. there have to be a certain electrical synchronicity with the brain and the heart for continuity onto the liver, the kidney.
Does that mean there can be no permanent heart transplant that will work? I don't know. Is that...
At this stage of our evolution, I don't know. At this stage of our the technical development, I don't know of where a heart transplant is holding on.
So it's just a matter of time then, usually, before there's a failure. But that's not true with the other organs.
The other organs, when you transplant them, they'll hold, they'll take. And so far, there is definitely electrical transference with the heart. You see, what is observed in the lives of martyrs or people who sacrifice their life for others on the tremendous commitment, all the parts of the anatomy may break down except their heart. Even if they were to ignite themselves with fire before a whole group of people, the whole anatomy may consume itself, and yet their heart may remain functioning, so it wouldn't be consumed. These are the unusual phenomena of the anatomy when it zero in on heroic or heroic action or love for your fellow man, no greater love than he would lay down his life for his fellow man. There is a subtle connectedness in the anatomy of all the organs, and the only organ that will sustain or seem to defy, and all the mystics that they have picked up in their bodies and observed, the heart is the one portion of the anatomy that defies this particular law of breaking down or phasing down. And many of the mystics that have been preserved, they've taken their heart out and kept it in a perfect state.
Isn't there one in Canada?
Yes, I've been to that one too. I've been there many times.
And that's a saint.
Brother Andre.
Brother Andre, right. And his heart is
His heart is permanently perfect right there.
Normal right now. Yeah. And it's visible.
Yeah, it's visible. You can go and see it. It's in a container, so a glass container.
Is it pumping? Is it pumping?
It's viable.
But it looks like a perfectly normal heart that's just heart. Been removed. Yeah. It's in a glass case. It's amazing.
It's just like it just taken out. There's no
deterioration.
That's one of the things about the anatomy that is zeroing in with the electromagnetic aspect of the mechanism. So far we have noticed that you can transplant any other part of the anatomy and it will bond and take, because it doesn't seem to require extreme electromagnetic connectedness to do it. But when it comes to the heart, it seems that it overrides every other part of the anatomy for this electromagnetic condition. Yet in the biological clock, the organ that takes precedence over the entire body is the lungs. So there we see now that lung transplant doesn't work sometimes. Yet in the transplant of the organs, whenever the breakdown shows up, the organ isn't holding, it ends up either in the blood and the kidney. Those are the organs that fail to complete the job. But you have four organs in your biological clock that are what we call shunters. That's your gallbladder, your heart, large intestine, kidney. They're all interrelated when it comes to surgery. If one is not functioning, properly, eventually all the rest specifically start to shut down. In your heart, your kidney shuts down. In your gallbladder, your large intestine shut down.
What function does the appendix have? What function does the appendix
have? The appendix is in normal conditions of the body would not be missed by the body. But whenever there's a radiation discharge in the air, then the body is more vulnerable if the appendix is missing. In Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they found that those who had their appendix removed were the most susceptible to the radiation reaction. And those who had their appendix and did get burned by the radiation, those were the ones that did survive longer. Even when they gave them the various treatments, it seemed that some reaction is occurring in that portion of the anatomy with the appendix that seems to phase down and recuperate quicker. And it interacts with the thyroid, which where they found the iodine is essential to radiation activity. But it's you see it's on the right side of your body where the appendix is, and it takes the pressure off of the ascending colon from the vesical valve. So it's like a pressure relief. Now when it gets clogged from eating fried foods, and most it's from fried foods that are really oil, is so hot, and you immerse the food, and it varnishes the food, glaze it, that it doesn't really break down properly, it clogs up. Then in the morning around 8:30, you get a cramp in there, a pain, and you rush it to the hospital, and the first thing they've discovered is that you have an impacted appendix. That's where it attacks you right at that time, because the large intestine is in that period of the day from 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock, the large intestine is active, and so you get an attack right then. But
NASA has found that if the astronauts, that if they had their appendix, they could meet stress,
right?
And if they didn't have it, they couldn't meet stress.
That's right. The gravity ratio, now this is from working with gravity machines. People who have appendix problems, and I put them in a gravity machine, they have dizzy spells when the appendix has been removed. So I always ask them, have you had the appendix removed? Because they can't take too long gravity inclined positions. But if they didn't have it removed, then they work with them and their body starts correcting. So the inclined position gravity technique of therapy, we try to be aware if they have their appendix or not. See, because of the inclined pressure, it's a sort of a pressure relief valve to take the stress and level off the body from. But you see, if you go in space, you have that much water to contend with your body against that much pressurization of the speed. So you need something to take the what is called the constriction dilation of the colon, because your only three position an astronaut can be in space, like this, stretched out, or up, with his foot up, and the other position is via sitting and or holding. So bulk of the time the vehicle might be too small for him to move around, so he's going to be in a elevated position, so everything is hooked into him. So he's fed automatically from in that position. Like, you ever see those chairs where the leg comes up? He's like in that, he's all the time, he's like that, he's not more to go. So that is where the bulk of the pressure is going to be, in the hip. So if he's missing the appendix, that tends to constrict and dilate to compensate for the monotony of the pressure, he's going to feel it right there, he's going to black up. So they can't take stress longer than the other person. Now, a person with a longer colon will take more stress than the person with a shorter colon. And there are people who are born with an extra 2 inches, 3 inches longer in their colon than others. Yeah. There are a few people born like that. There was one Frenchman who they found like that, that went through a stress test where they put him down in a cave, dark holes in the ground, put him in space machines, and he had an extra 3 inches in his colon. Then they were subjecting him to all type of stress pressures, and he could withstand more stress than the other fellows who had the regular length of colon. But because he had the extra 3 inches, he was withstanding more stress than he had his appendix too. Hydrogen peroxide?
Yeah.
To increase oxygenation?
Yeah, and this is supposed to be like different than like normally buying a drugstore and bleach your hair out or whatever.
No, hydrogen peroxide is primarily is a wound sterilizer. If you have a big, if you have a cut, the quickest thing to put the to sterilize it is the destroyed peroxide, it'll foam off it, prevent any bacterial infection. Or if you have any blisters or accumulation of pus around the area, you throw the hydrogen peroxide to clean it. And then you, after it's clean and the wound is clear, you put sugar. It'll heal up in a few seconds. Or you put cayenne pepper to leave no scars. I've cut this hair many times with knives, I don't have no scar. Last time when I, what's her name, saw me cut my hand here, it was a nice slipping cut. She was very, well, I said, oh, funny. Just took the peroxide and wash it, and then throw the cayenne pepper on it. Because that's a natural constrictor. When you put it in your mouth, it'll burn like hell, but that's a dilator. No, you see, people don't know that. It dilates in your mouth and it constricts on the outside of your body. A wound like that, you take it burned, when you pour the cayenne pepper, it'll constrict it, stop the blood. Put it in your mouth, you'll burn like hell because the enzymes dilate. Now, then one day, somebody saw me take a teaspoon of cayenne pepper and I'd say, I'm going to eat it. I said, oh, come on, Adana. You know what kind. So, I didn't tell them what I was going to do. So I put the cayenne in my mouth, and then I just walked over and I took a piece of ghee and put it in my mouth, and I ate it. So they didn't know the difference between the ghee and the cayenne, what it was doing. So when they sprinkle a lot of cayenne in their food and they start putting them out and start burning, and they start complaining, I'd give them a piece of ghee and to eat. And all of a sudden the burning is gone and they want more cayenne pepper. See, that's the funny phenomenon of it. The lubricant action of the oil in the mouth acts as a constrictor to the mouth, allowing the cayenne pepper or capsicum to pass through without irritating it. Just like it wouldn't irritate hair, the lack of a constrictor in the mouth. If it's traveling through the oil. But if it's not traveling through the oil, it dilates and it'll burn the hell out of you. Yeah, you need 2 capsules if you got ulcers. I had ulcers. So I used to take 2 capsules 3 times a day for the ulcer. It cured the ulcer, plus you add it with cabbage juice for vitamin U. I had my share of sickness. The regular methods didn't work. So I had to go to the unorthodox method to get well.
It's vitamin U.
It's found in onion cabbage. And it seals the ulceration of an ulcer in the
in purple cabbage.
Preferable the white cabbage first. Well, and the purple cabbage would be more for an iron deficiency. But if you're going to have an ulcer problem, I'd use the white cabbage first.
That was
going to
be good for the heart as well.
Hmm?
Capsicum is good for the heart.
Capsicum, yeah, it's good for the heart.
Is that the name for cayenne?
Yeah, that's the name for cayenne. Cayenne happens to be the French location where it was found in French Guiana, the island of the French Guiana. There's a place called Cayenne, and the cayenne plants grow there very well. So when the French occupied French Guiana, they saw that location and they called that area Cayenne. But then actually the real name is Capsicum. And then capsicum originally came from Africa, which we call African bird pepper. The BTUs are varied. The original African bird pepper has a high BTU in the range of 900 to 1,000 BTU. Now, when the African people who were slaves carried their bird pepper with them across the West Indian Islands and down into the Brazilian areas, into the Guyanas or the Guyanas, they grew it in this area in which the land was appropriate, and there they call it cayenne. But it was actually capsicum or African bird pepper. But there, it's not as, it is strong, but it doesn't have a high BTU. Whereas originally from Africa, it still has a higher BTU.
I noticed in the handout that you recommend onion soup with comfrey. What does the comfrey do?
It takes away the gas. Nobody likes to have onion soup and gas at the same time. This fades down the gas. It helps you to digest it better. But the onion soup primarily is to deactivate the lower colon and to give you high percentage of chlorine. Now, what do you use chlorine for?
Disinfect.
Well, so if you want a high percentage of chlorine at nighttime in your colon, it's a nature's natural disinfectant for what? The overnight storage of dead waste by the time the liver get rid of it to dump it out in the large intestine.
Will it work on milk and cheese? That just turns to plastic.
Melted cheese is very difficult to get out of the system. So only malic acid can break it up, but it's too slow. That's why we have to resort to colon irrigation or gastrointestinal evacuation to clean it out, because it's too slow by the mouth. So you have to go into the lower colon and flush out with water and vinegar as a malic acid base to clear it out and then come out. And if you use high fiber and Metamucil, it clogs it up more. So really, when they recommended those ideas for cleaning the colon, they ran into a lot of problems and people got more clogged up because they didn't take into consideration why they were cleaning the colon from what. The clogged up colon, most of it is melted cheese, the fiber from popcorn, and very little other fibers that are there. But you find anybody who's totally clogged up, they have been a big melted cheese eater. Guilty. It's all right to eat cheese, but once it's melted, you put it in your mouth, and if your saliva can break it down to emulsify it, don't expect your colon to do it after it passes your mouth. But you see, you'll chew a piece of pizza pie in your mouth, everything will dissolve except that cheese. And because you pay for it, you don't want to spit it out. You'd swallow it. That's the funniest phenomenon of a human being. He don't pay for it, he'll never spit it out. Even if he knows it's bad for him, he will spit it out. And I'm guilty because I did the same thing too. Somebody told me that years ago the spirit, I was looking at some, I paid for it. That's a common reaction. But after I had enough clogged up, then I realized how stupid I was. I had to go and clean it out. But I couldn't clean it orally through the mouth, just it wouldn't come out. No amount of apple cider vinegar was sufficient to break it up. I had to get culinary. And the funny thing is, the surgeon doctor who told me, said, Mr. Lee, you're wasting your time following all the dietary programs to get rid of that stuff. You come to my clinic and I'll give you a colon irrigation. I was back in the 50s. A what, doctor? A colon irrigation? So what I did, I was discharged from the hospital on the Sunday. I was supposed to go to his clinic on Friday. All day Monday I fasted on water, 3 healthy bowel movements. All day Tuesday I fasted on water, 3 healthy bowel movements. All day Wednesday, same thing. By Thursday, nothing at all. Drink water, no bowel movement. Friday morning, when he hooked me up, and in 15 minutes, what I saw coming out of me, I said, Doc, didn't you give me the okay 6 weeks ago to eat corn? He says, yes, you signed the initial thing, yeah, I was in the cast, but yeah. He said, isn't that corn coming out through that tube there? He stopped the machine, he said, yes, what's the problem? I said, tell me that, Doc, I ate the corn when you were okay, I haven't touched corn since that time to now. And that is coming out of my body after 6 weeks? He says, yes, son. I shut my mouth there and I said to myself, from this day on, I want to know about me. I've had enough of engineering and everything. I don't want to know anything more about this body. Because if that is actually coming out of me, I don't know nothing to be healthy. I got the wrong notion of it. So I stayed there and after I got cleaned out. The first thing I said to him was, I said, Doc, is there any way I can learn about me? He said, yeah, come around now. And use my library, and he was quite a great source of help and inspiration that got me interested in physical therapy and everything, and taught me a lot about cadaver work and the anatomy that really straightened out my thinking about the human body. Then I realized cleanliness is not next to godliness, cleanliness is godliness. That's the real truth. Clean up your act, Adano, and get well. I really found out a lot of things that the body clogged up about. Somebody told me years ago to do colon irrigation, I said, what? But until I saw that, I wouldn't believe it. Then, you know, one of the things is when it told me, said, you know, son, you had a lot of pork in your youth. I said, yeah. I looked at him like a man in a way, you know. He says, well, you know, you got worms. I said, what? He said, yeah, you got pork. I says, any way to get it out? He said, yeah. And when he told me what to do, I was almost freaked out. Imagine having to eat pumpkin seeds to get rid of it. Fast on pumpkin seeds. This is a wonderful Canadian doctor. He's a surgeon.
Really? Way back then.
Yeah. Pumpkin seeds, and I ate it, and in 3 days I went for this colon irrigation and I saw the thing on the machine. It freaked me out. But he knew his stuff.
So
I'm benefiting from going through it, that's all. I think the best way you learn is when you go through it. You can share it with somebody else. In our go treat, you don't really know.
I'd rather listen to you.
We've had a lot of patients that have gone through it, see for themselves. Well, I hate to break it up, but I got a long ride to go down the road. And I appreciate all the wonderful joy that everybody here. Let's have a few minutes meditation for you.
never see us again.
Yes, I'll be.
Yes, no, maybe.
I'll be here in September, but I'll be in your head every day.
Right.
You don't get that. Out of sight and not out of mind. Yeah.
Betty just came from camp yesterday.
Yeah.
Talking with Yogananda this morning.
Yeah.
And he seems to be getting along well in heaven.
Yeah.
I was just telling him my experiences we were having.
Not yet. I haven't put my stuff in the bin. I forgot my key from March.
I have it. I think I have it. Oh.
I'll get my stuff.
I have no rush.
Every bit of it. Thanks for the treatment, and the advice, and the medication itself. You see, it's there.
Use it.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll be looking forward to September.
Well, trips would be the one. Are you coming back tonight?
Are you going now?
Yes, get ready to leave.
Yeah. Here, so I'll start going. Getting out of closet.
No.
Left your bathing suit.
Your okay. Bag and the table.
They'll get it out of Donna Elizabeth. This is from Christine. All right, I'll treasure anything that's left.
Fantastic. He has changed this thing. It's sort of beautiful. Yeah. Right at the beginning of Aries. Yeah.
He's supposed to be back at work on Saturday, I told him. If he doesn't make it, it's called on the same
time.
It's whatever.
I'll be in Houston on Tuesday.
Yeah, like, hey, how many hours is it?
It's a two-day drive, I think.
You get there Tuesday and he would leave Thursday. We could even fly him.
Yeah, the flight from Coffee is close to Sacramento.
Yeah.
I think it's about 100
One way?
Yeah.
And you've got the money because we said it was $200.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Flying's probably better.
This is the food money. There is one check in here that's supposed to be good. So you can watch that. Okay. And the rest is part of it. There we go with that.
We collected up with the last year from 800 and kind of. He was saving money.
Money.
Prosperity.
Of course.
And your appointment's right. Over 1,200.
Okay.
tofu one second. That was $650. Thank you for helping to break some more fixation and to reorganize it, sort us. So the 3 o'clock is really considered the daytime.
Mm-hmm. Well, from morning, actually, to go, best to go by sunrise.
Okay.
And sunset. See, because
in the morning.
In the morning. So then you get up to do meditation in the morning, you take a morning.
Okay.
And then
meditate.
Right. Yeah. So 3 should be at nighttime. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Now the best time.
We'll be flying off.
Okay.
Whoa.
Now. Because we know our limitations so far at this point, or we have to work on cleansings and things. Okay. Best time to sleep is from 11 to 1.
That's good. You should shut down, take advantage of it.
For that period of time.
Because at least your brain is synchronizing with the mouth holding itself for the absence of pain. So, you can go to bed, sit down.
Until 3, let's say. So really, if we slept until, let's say, 2:30, and then did some exercise to wake up with for half an hour, or did something to... Okay, that would make sense. Tai Chi, or do something. Yeah. We have everything.
Lovely time. I did. We did too. It was a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. It was. Oh, we had such a good time.
We did. Yeah.
That was a great try. Oh dear. Come back and tell us stories. Oh, meditation. Next Sunday, he'll be back, and he has the whole evening to tell us about. Give Ginger a back rub on the way.
Yeah.
See, if she starts to yell at you, you just rub her back like you do.
Bill Ballinger.
See you soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, bye-bye.
That last little meditation was very intense, very deep.
Perfect. Just what was needed.
You'll find more and more the entrance into the core skill becomes easier. So your whole body can focus better. Actually, I'll say this. In the early stages, it's like learning to drive a car. You always got all the ins and outs to figure out.
And what's going on the brakes?
Yeah, right, exactly. So it's the same thing as slowing the brain down. You're always going to run into the different structural language interfering. Mm-hmm. Like the car on the road, on the brain, words. And so your brain can never really say, satisfied without not wanting to talk. And that's actually the brain traffic. The road inside is a journey from the nostril to the back of the head, to the ear. But within that journey of that road, you have all the words that you've learned throughout your entire life. That's traffic. It's coming in and out. It's But don't panic as long as you don't panic, because if you're holding the steering wheel and staying ahead,
jump off, take at the wheel.
Right. Just keep focusing and then you have a bunch of and you don't fight the brain really on analyzing and just observing. But it takes time to understand it in the initial stages because we're so programmed a lot of different things that we never take time to observe. So when you begin to observe, after that it becomes natural. Your brain becomes natural.
Locked in. Other keys that wouldn't work. Keys that were locked.
And what is the most interesting phenomenon is the young man with his car.
Yeah.
It gave me an insight to the reaction of the owner.
Uh-huh.
How do you react in this way?
Yeah. See, you saw him the first time, because he was gentle, Hindu, Om Shanti Peace. And yet now he was disclosing his first encounter with the Dano, and I was totally shocked. But here was a gentle man acting as a very abrasive businessman, very egocentric. No, he wasn't like that at all the first time he met. So there's a two-face.
And then see, it changed too, because the egg system included utility. But today, the egg system didn't include the electricity.
Right.
And he'd have to install the
meter. Right.
And that was...
So, this is the second Hindu we've been business with. Remember the first Hindu in our room? Who lied. So I wonder if Hindu business people have that. I don't know. This is the second Hindu we've encountered that we've seen as a difference in personality, a double face.
10-year guarantee on our book that costs twice as much.
And they've now gone bankrupt.
So.
We're covered. We're okay. We have master charge.
I think it's the visa we got to get away from.
I know, it's master charge, you go.
Well, she's interesting. She's a lot of person. Yeah, the person. The key. You mentioned that person.
Could find the key. Because the other person with the duplicate key was not there.
Thank you. Yeah.